Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
I am the ferryman.
In the shadows of the afterlife, the ferryman of souls guides America's most influential spirits to their eternal rest.
Where are you taking me?
Are you death?
This road is not on any map.
How much for a ticket?
All I ask for in payment is a tale.
I don't know who got to Kennedy first.
And the devastation those first bombs caused.
I've never been to hell, but I know intimately the hymns of the damned.
Binge this season of The Passage now. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Ding dong, Las Culturistas calling.
iHeart Podcast Awards 2023 Podcast of the Year, Las Culturistas, with SNL's Bowen Yang and comedian Matt Rogers.
There's stuff happening in 2024 that we really need to address.
Pop culture and huge guests, like the latest episode with
Dua Lipa.
The more I think about it, the more scared and nervous I get.
Listen to the newest episode of Las Culturistas with Dua Lipa and all episodes on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search Las Culturistas to start listening.
Ridiculous History is a production of iHeart Radio. Welcome back to the show, Ridiculous Historians. Thank you, as always, so much for tuning in. This is part 2222 of Spiteful Architecture, featuring our super producer, Mr. Max Williams.
Hello.
Himself a font of spite.
Oh, wow. I would maybe reserve that sobriquet for the quizster, Jonathan Strickland. I always think of Max as being pretty spite-free.
I don't know. I can be quite spiteful.
Diet spite. How about that? Huh?
Yeah. I am quite well at holding a very powerful and useless resentment. Like, very good at holding those resentments for way too long, and they have no reason. So spite, I can see myself building a massive stupid house to piss somebody off.
I can totally see you do that. But that's just fun.
And then they move away like 3 weeks later. Mm-hmm. And they were moving away before I built the house.
Oh, yes, yes. Nice callback. How about we call you an architect instead of spiteful?
The Architect is a very good... Actually, there was a kind of a 311 adjacent band that was a local band growing up called the Riff Raff Kings. And I believe the bassists, they all had like rap names like all of the Beastie Boys. And the bassist's name was The Architect, which I thought was just a really cool, like, you know, nickname.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. And you are Noel. Mm. I am Ben.
Still.
This is, don't call it a comeback, or you may if you wish, folks, because this is part of a somewhat continuing series. Our pal research associate Jeff Bartlett hipped us to something called Spiteful Architecture, the Architecture of Spite, which is funny because we're architecture fans, and we always, I always associate it with these noble things, these pretentious thoughts, like good architecture is frozen music. But it turns out quite a lot of people have instead used architecture as a way of making a permanent screw you guys statement to any number of other people.
Are you guys familiar with Albert Speer?
S-P-E-E-R?
Correct.
Yes. Yeah.
Famous German architecture, very closely involved with the Nazis and building out some of their, you know, typically foreboding structures. But in the podcast that I'm working on with our dear friend Jordan Runtag, the Stones touring party about the Rolling Stones Exile on Main Street album and tour, he refers to Chip Monk, who was the guy that like built the stages and also was like the MC at Woodstock, as the Albert Speer of rock. And I did not know who Albert Speer sphere was. I had to look it up. But yeah, kind of a dubious comparison there. But, you know, it's always good to learn new references.
Chipmunk?
Chip Albert something Beresford Monk the Third. And he was like this, this yeah, he was the guy that told people to lay off the brown acid at Woodstock. And he got hit. He was basically like the kind of, you know, the one of the first big like minds behind touring rock music and like building elaborate stages and lighting setups. But it was all very seat of your pants at the time. But he kind of created the mold for that whole world. Talk about him a lot in the pod. It's pretty interesting stuff.
So do check it out, folks. And Noel, what's the name of that show one more time?
Doan's Touring Party, the podcast. Thank you. Hey, that was an organic plug, though. You got to give me that.
And well, I just want to make sure people know the name. And check it out. All the episodes are free wherever you find your favorite shows. There is no spiteful architecture there, just solid journalism and a hell of an audible experience. When we're talking about spiteful architecture, man, I got to tell you, when we first got into part one, I thought, how many can there be? But sure enough, this is a part two that may end up being a two-parter itself. I know, right?
A two-part part two?
What is this, idiomatic for the people?
Exactly. No, because it does seem like a very specific flex that would be reserved for like the moneyed gentry, you know, for the most part. Like someone to have enough money to throw around, they could like invest their money in just pissing somebody else off. So you would think it might be rare. I think we've said in the last installment, we referenced the Spite Store, the coffee shop in Curb Your Enthusiasm. That was my first introduction to this concept, but it's actually got a lot of historical precedent, as we will get into right now.
Oh, yeah. We're going to talk about the Skinny House, a place literally named the Spite House, the Kavanaugh Building, the Pie House. But you know where we wanted to start? We were talking off air. We wanted to start someplace close to home for the Americans in the audience. The Macy's department store in Times Square. This is nuts. I've walked past that place so many times in the past. Never had any idea about the story behind it.
I didn't either. All I know is that it's just, you know, always been considered kind of the flagship Macy's. It was a place to be seen, you know, in a certain era, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you go over to the corner of 34th and Broadway in New York City, you'll see that flagship store that you just described, Noel. It's a Macy's. It's huge. It's taken up almost an entire city block since 1902, but it doesn't quite form a complete rectangle. It takes up almost the whole block, except for one little corner notch.
Like a nook, huh? That's weird. What's the deal with that? I mean, okay, guys, like Jerry Seinfeld, but I'm leaving it in. He doesn't own that expression. In fact, I don't know if he ever even said it. I think people just making fun of him say it.
It's more of a Rooney thing.
I think that's right.
It's like beam me up, Scotty.
Yeah, or Luke, I am your father. You know, but in any case, this little nook in question here, it has to. You know, we know real estate is at a premium in New York, as is just space. That's why everything's built on top of itself. So this has obviously sported numerous non-Macy's tenants over the years, ranging from, fast food joints like Burger King to the delightfully named Sunglass Hut, which never really feels much like a hut to me. I don't know the hut part.
Have you ever bought sunglasses at Sunglass Hut before?
I haven't. I've never seen the point.
I did once because I had to. I was on, you know, I'm not a day walker by nature. So when I'm forced out in the sun, I need to protect my peepers. And I picked up some sunglasses at a Sunglass Hut. I think it was it a kiosk? Do they have kiosk for Sunglass Hut?
They're always pretty small. I don't know if they necessarily have kiosks, but isn't a Sunglass Hut owned by Luxottica at this point?
I mean, ultimately.
Yeah. That's another story for another day. Actually, if you want to hear about it, you can check out our sister show, Stuff They Don't Want You to Know, where we go into the conspiracy behind why eyewear is so damn expensive and owned by one giant monopolistic company.
Mm-hmm. Weirdly enough, out of Italy. But yeah, there's this huge building. It's a Macy's, except for this very narrow five-story building in a corner, in a nook. There was a Sunglass Hut. There was a Burger King. There's a story behind this. It all goes back to the 1800s. A guy named Roland H. Macy and a dude he bitterly hated named Henry Siegel, who was a partner of a store called Siegel Cooper. They were beefed up. Siegel Cooper, back in the day, was a store on the between like the 18th and 19th streets on 6th Avenue. And in their glory days, they were a neck and neck rival with Macy's.
Bro, really quickly, I just had to Google this and I found a result really quickly. Turns out William H. Macy, the actor, is third cousin four times removed of Roland H. Macy, the founder of Macy's department store.
I am Jack's complete lack of surprise.
Right. Yeah.
Did I tell you guys I'm an ancestor of the Addams family?
You're an ancestor.
There's no Addams family. That's a television show.
John Adams.
Okay.
You're a descendant of.
Sorry, the Addams family in my mind purely belongs to Gomez and Morticia.
Unless you have some time travel technology of which I am unaware, you're a descendant of.
Yeah, same difference.
Oh, okay. Oh, good. Time's a flat circle. Great. It is.
Potato Clamato. But what's the deal? It seems like there's a beef a brewing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Our buddy Roland starts his store, named in a burst of humility, Macy's, in 1858. It's on the southeast corner of 14th Street and 6th Avenue. There's a big shopping district that's just coming into play on 14th Street around this time. And we want to give a big shout out to Bloomberg, the author Mimi Kirk, who helped us out a lot with this story. So he starts in 1858. It's the 1890s. And Macy's says, you know what? I'm going to leapfrog over this shopping district. I'm going to build a store on 34th and Broadway, and I'm going to do it in secret so my competitors don't know.
Okay. We've seen that happen before, like the Florida Project as an example, where the Walt Disney Company secretly bought up all this land in Florida, in the Orlando area, under this name, the Florida Project, so that no one would know what was coming. They were developing this massive, you know, theme park resort, what would ultimately become resort and multiple theme parks. But yeah, this kind of, you know, buying up real estate in secret is not uncommon.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And it makes sense as well. I imagine for quite some time, there's been a cottage industry of people tracking down the actions of real estate brokers, right, to try to figure this stuff out. I mean, even now in 2023, out in California by Travis Air Force Base, there's a mysterious company buying hundreds of acres of land, Flannery Associates. No one knows who they are. That's so right. Tale as old as time. Yeah.
So as you said, Ben, late 1890s, Macy's is getting into this secretive expansion project to build their flagship store at 34th and Broadway. And they started to just buy up all of these blocks of property from 34th Street all the way to 35th Street. Not a block, but, you know, blocks.
Big deal. It's a big deal.
Packets, parcels, right? And Macy's, as an organization, had a gentleman's agreement to pay, it's hilarious when you think about it, time, a mere $250,000 to one Albert Duane Pell for that corner of 34th Street.
Mm-hmm. But someone leaked the info. Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver. And this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courteney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
Hey there, I'm Dr. Maya Shunker, and I'm a scientist who studies human behavior. Many of us have experienced a moment in our lives that changes everything. A moment that instantly divides our life into a before and an after. On my podcast, A Slight Change of Plans, I talk to people about navigating these very moments.
The last couple of years has been the hardest season of our marriage, for sure. I'm surprised our marriage survived it. I think we both are. I think we both were barely holding on. Nothing compares to how hard this is.
Their stories are full of candor, awe, and hard-won wisdom. And you'll hear from scientists who teach us how we can be more resilient in the face of change.
True behavior change is really identity change. Every action you take is a vote for the type of person you wish to become.
Listen to A Slight Change of Plans on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Maybe it was a PI, maybe it was someone trading a hot tip for anything, like anything from cash to, maybe just the price of a few drinks at a happy hour. Someone squealed, someone snitched. Macy's plans became public knowledge in April of 1901, and this is before that gentleman's agreement turned into paperwork. We're getting a lot of this from a book called Holdouts! With an exclamation mark by Andrew Alpern and Seymour Durst from 1984. So when people know that Macy is conspiring to buy up this block, his old rival, Henry Siegel, sends a guy in kind of like Slugworth in Willy Wonka. And this agent of Siegel's goes to Pell and says, "Hey, man, we'll give you $375,000 just for this little plot of land." What was it? What was it? No, like 1,154 square feet, something like feet, not miles. Very
you nailed
small.
It. Well, square feet. And this was agreed to, perhaps non-gentlemanly, considering that there was already a pre-existing verbal agreement, right?
I think so. He definitely, Pell, that is, definitely decided to chase the money instead right. of keeping to his word. So business can be dirty. People are still kind of divided over this part. Did Siegel want to buy that slice of land to embarrass his competitor and maybe have, picture it, a big sign that says, "We got better prices mm-hmm. at Siegel's"?
Or just Macy's sucks, whatever.
Yeah, right. Macy's blows. He didn't do that. He didn't make a bunch of anti-Macy's propaganda. And right now, if you look at the best records we have, it seems there are two possible explanations for his motives here.
Yeah. I mean, he had an associate by the name of Robert Smith, not of the Cure fame. But this gentleman had a dry goods business. He already had a brick and mortar spot set up near Macy's and wanted to expand and set up a new shop. Smith then announced that he was planning on putting up a 12-story building on the corner this location to sell women's clothing, not dry goods at all. but this was probably just a weird bit of flexing again, because remember, the size is really odd.
Yeah.
You couldn't really build that upward, I don't think, right? It's too narrow. It would be weird building. It'd be like one of those half floors and being John Malkovich.
Yeah, it would be like one of those weird buildings in downtown Tokyo or in a European country. It would look up to code. The staircase would be very strange. It's just awkward all the way around. So there's another account that feels a little more plausible. And the idea is that Siegel himself wanted to build a new store on the old Macy's site at 14th and 6th. Macy's was moving from there. And they were thinking, people will still walk by. There will still be foot traffic. So, of course, they're going to go shopping because they're already there.
Yep.
And so what he wanted to do was have a hook in Macy's new plan. And Siegel's own conspiracy, apparently, was that he would say, "Hey, Macy, I own that little corner plot there, and I'll give it to you for a song so long as you agree to give up your lease on the old 14th Street store."
Bargaining chip.
Mm-hmm. A bargaining chip, just so.
Very that, clever.
Yeah, that lease would run till 1903, so the timeline works out, but it appears Macy didn't play ball.
And just jump in here. It feels kind of spiteful even on Macy's end a little bit more, because it's like they were leaving the place already. The guy's like, "Hey, you mind just leaving the lease like 2 years earlier?" Like, he's not like telling them that they have to pay the lease or anything. It's like, is it a little dirty of a tactic? Well, sure. But it's like, I don't know. Like, Macy's is also probably getting a little bit of a break. Like, they don't have to pay 2 years of this lease. So I don't know.
It's true. But at a certain level of wealth and success, which I would argue that if he's, you know, building this giant flagship store, he's probably all right. Probably more worth it to cut out the competition than it is to get a little bit of a break. He's thinking big picture. This is like high level spite. You know?
Yeah. I mean, this is the type of spite you can do when you have more money than you know what to do with.
Mm-hmm. Right. And there is a bigger picture, like you said, a long-term goal here. But also, these guys don't like each other. You know what I mean? They wouldn't cross the street to piss if the other guy was on fire. Can I say that on this show?
I think you can. So. It's not one of the George Carlin words. I think you can even say that on the radio.
Yeah, you definitely can.
And better also, than tinkle, you know, if you were, if you find,
him. Yeah, it's better than saying f- also.
If you find yourself in a survival situation, remember, piss is not the best thing to use to put out a fire. Try to find another source of non-petroleum liquid.
But if you're stung by a jellyfish, it's just the ticket.
If you're stung by a jellyfish, you know what? Depending on the jellyfish, why not? Why not live a little at the very end? See if it was something you were into.
Balsamic dressing also does it. You don't have to pee on it. It just has to be something neutralized.
Unless you're on a picnic lunch situation on the beach and you happen to be making some sort of salad, you know, the piss comes with the human body. Enough about this, though.
Well, yeah. So clearly, Macy's and Siegel, their main rivalry was urine-based, but it bled over into their department store businesses.
Trickled down, if you will.
Yeah, if you will. And so now these guys are beefed up with this. Macy's refuses to play ball with Siegel. And he says in July of 1901, he says, "We're building a huge new store, a flagship store. It's 9 stories high. It's an entire city block." And then someone says, "But is it the entire city block, Mr. Macy's?" And he goes,
"I did everything right and they indicted me."
Sorry, that was just the voice was hitting me on that level. I love that soundbite, by the way. But yeah, so Macy is employing the architectural services of Delimos and Cordes, and they were able to complete the structure that they had planned around the little enclave, the little cutout. And they created a ground floor arcade, which is kind of like a lobby. Or is it an open space that you can kind of like go through between spaces?
Yeah, it's like that. It's almost a promenade. You know, you can just walk, you can stroll through and take in the sights.
I love the idea of a promenade and also the action of promenading through the promenade. That always struck me as real classy. He builds this arcade, which unfortunately didn't have any claw machines or Galaga tables or anything like that, at least at this point. So this does create this little cut through connecting Broadway and 34th Street. And the Macy's flagship store does have its grand opening in 1902.
It sure does. And this is the structure that's still there under those big Macy's signs. And here's a bit more of spite, of the old ultra spite for you. Macy's paid to keep its old store vacant until its lease went up. So they weren't doing business there. They kept it as a ghost store. And then once the lease expired, Siegel took over the property. He built a 10-story high structure he called the 14th Street Store. His buddy, Robert Smith, the women's clothier, bought Siegel's interest in the 34th Street corner in 1907. And in 1911, just a few years later, he sold that structure for $1 million. At the time, this was a record-breaking price for any property in Manhattan, about $866.55 a square foot. And people wondered if Macy's was the, you know, the ultimate buyer of that property, but they never were. And that's why even in modern times, there was a Sunglass Hut, a Burger King, you name it. Oh, also an arcade is just like a series of arches. Just to correct myself there.
Yeah, I was thinking it was
supported
open
by
air.
Columns.
Got it. But it is, it's a path, you know, it's meant to kind of like connect two spaces so you can like cut through, sort of like a bespoke alley.
Yeah, or it can be freestanding or it can be attached to a wall, but it can also be a promenade because a promenade is just a public place for walking as a social activity. Life was weird before TV.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah. What did people even do? I guess they just strolled, you know?
They just strolled,
they
bro.
Just strolled around.
And have really, really petty fights.
That's true. Well, I mean, that still goes
on. Oh, well,
on
that's,
today.
I mean, Twitter.
Yeah.
That's just part of the human condition.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver. And this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courteney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
Hey there, I'm Dr. Maya Shunker, and I'm a scientist who studies human behavior. Many of us have experienced a moment in our lives that changes everything. A moment that instantly divides our life into a before and an after. On my podcast, A Slight Change of Plans, I talk to people about navigating these very moments.
The last couple of years has been the hardest season of our marriage, for sure. I'm surprised our marriage survived it. I think we both are. I think we both were barely holding on. Nothing compares to how hard this is.
Their stories are full of candor, awe, and hard-won wisdom. And you'll hear from scientists who teach us how we can be more resilient in the face of change.
True behavior change is really identity change. Every action you take is a vote for the type of person you wish to become.
Listen to A Slight Change of Plans on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So moving on, and boy, you know, you wouldn't think there'd be so much spite to talk about when it comes to architecture, but we just filled up a proper half hour just talking about Macy's and these two fellas arguing over space. So we think we're going to do another one here, and then we're going to take a pause and do a second part of this episode for Thursday. But this is, Ben, you teased it beautifully at the top of the show, about something called the Skinny House. What's up with that? What's the Skinny House?
Oh, the Skinny House. Yes. right. Let's do this one. This is definitely a two-parter now. So speaking of awkward architecture, itself an awkward phrase, If you go to Boston's North End in New England, you will see a weird building tucked between two other brick buildings. It's four stories. It's pale green. It is about 30 feet long. It's only 10 feet wide. It's the house at 44 Hull Street. You can see pictures of it easily. It has no front door. You can only get to it through a side alley. First question would be, why the heck would someone build that house?
To what end, you might ask, right?
To what North End, yeah.
Well, exactly. I love a good brotherly legend. And in this one, these two brothers inherited a plot of land from their father. And when one of the brothers returned from their time serving in the Civil War, to his chagrin, he found that his other brother from the same mother had built a large home, presumably just for him and his family, on wow. this shared piece of land. That's not cool, other brother.
No, and that is accurate. That has been documented multiple times. We pulled some of this from Boston Magazine, written by Madeline Billis. And what a dick move.
Yeah. It is the stuff of legend, though, that we know of them is the brothers. You know,
right.
The one brother, the other. This is like classic, you know, fairy tale stuff. So the one who built the house used pretty much the whole share of land. At the very least, he took more than what was meant for him. Presumably all this was demarcated in some form of paperwork, I would hope. But maybe it was just sort of like gentlemen's rules, you know, where it's like, you know, we get this inherited equally. We are two people. It should be split evenly right down the middle. But I guess that all depends on the shape of the land and all of that. We'll get into this. So when the second brother came back and he saw what his other brother had done, he was very upset. And he decided to take his revenge, to exact his revenge. We had a similar story to this in our last episode where I believe someone built an ugly monument or something like that. Just would see this annoying thing. I think it was in France. It was like some sort
of... Was it the fake wall?
There was one. See, I'm getting them confused now because there was one with like a feature on a fountain.
That was in Vatican City.
Yeah, I can't remember. They're all running together for me. So much spite in the world of architecture. But he decided to build what was referred to in historical writings as a skinny house to block out the sun from his brother's building. Yeah, and he obviously didn't intend on inhabiting the spot because it didn't even have a door.
Yeah, it only has that side entrance. If you look
front
at
door,
it,
precisely.
Yeah, if you look at a picture of it, it's not even the most impressive. It's not even the most impressive house. It's four stories if you count that window coming out of the roof. It's definitely a spite house, and it is clearly meant, it's abutting the other building. It's clearly meant to block out the view. If you look at the side door, and you can find tours and stuff of this building online, the side door looks like a window. It reminds me of, I've been to some hotels in Europe where they say they have a terrace, and it took me a second to find the terrace because it was a window that happened to open big enough to be like a hobbit door. So that's kind of what this door is like. And people still live there. People enjoy it. It's kind of a flex to own that piece of history in Boston. I believe it was, there's an interview that's been going around a while back with the Simonic family, Simonic, and they talked with the Boston Globe about how much fun they had throwing a party in the Hull House for New Year's Eve. I'm saying fun somewhat sarcastically. I think the novelty wore off once someone had to use the restroom. This is not a big place.
No, it's not something. When you look at it, it's not. It looks kind of like a condo. You know what I mean? Like what you might see, like a townhouse. Like here in Atlanta, there's a couple spots where there are these like rows of these real skinny type houses that are, you know, you buy them and it's like a relatively affordable human dwelling. But they are kind of weirdly skinny. And you'll see places like this in, you know, San Francisco and other, you know, sure. spots. But this was not part of the urban planning, let's just say, right? This was like an afterthought. And it still stands to this day. And it looks odd, but it doesn't look like crazy. You know, it's something that we definitely see stuff like it.
Yeah, it would make sense to see that in Philly or to see that in some older U.S. towns. It would make a lot of sense to see it in places like Amsterdam, too, right? Any densely populated place that has some centuries to its past. If you want to figure out what it looks like inside, do check out the tours that are available on YouTube. You'll see walkthroughs. One of the Semitic family members, Jennifer, told the Boston Globe this, quote, "We had a party of 10 one New Year's Eve, and when one person has to go to the bathroom, everyone has to move." She said there are only 5 doors in the house. The bathroom and the living room are one of the few rooms actually separated by a door. And if you look on the outside, each of those 4 floors is a different room. That's how skinny it is.
Yeah, no, exactly. Exactly. And the youngest daughter's bedroom actually shared the floor with the closet.
Yeah.
How does that work?
That's all they had room for. They have a bedroom on the 3rd floor, a closet, and stairs. So if you want to go to the master bedroom on the top floor, you got to walk through your daughter's room. I'm sure every teenage girl would love that.
Because there's no walls either. You just walk into that floor and you're in the room. Am I right?
Right. Yes. Yeah, yeah. I don't think there's a door. I think it's just the stairs.
Got it.
Yeah.
Not particularly conducive to privacy, you know? So like you said, yeah, a teenage girl would not be down with that. So 964 square feet is what we're dealing with here, just to give you a clear picture for folks out there that are into, you know, measuring stuff. And to add insult to injury, I suppose, with all this lack of privacy, the house became something of a draw for tourists. So they would pretty commonly find folks camped out, you know, in their yard, taking pictures.
I wonder why they didn't build out the backyard at least a little bit, you know, and put a garden on the roof somewhere. Anyway, that, you know what? It's a piece of history now. So you can't. There's probably a law preventing them from doing too much renovation to it. But that house was built entirely of spite. The story, as you said, Noel, does seem a bit apocryphal. There aren't a ton of really solid sources on how it was constructed. I think the closest we could find here is that if you go to the Boston City Archives, you can see in the Hopkins Atlas of 1874, the way the land was split up into 5 lots in the 1880s. And we have a good friend of ours, Frank.
Frank!
Mulheron, who's appeared on Idiomatic for the People. He's worked in this world before, and he can attest how sketchy land deeds and titles can get, right, when you go that far back. Because at that point, isn't it mainly handwriting?
I think that's right. Yeah, you have to definitely go to, you know, physical archives and records to pull these sort of chains of custody, you know, for making sure that a title is quote-unquote clear.
And I kind of want to go there. You know what it reminds me of, Noel? It reminds me of the tiny house movement. It's a little bit bigger than the popular tiny houses. And, our pal Christopher Hasiotis had owned that tiny house. I always wanted to live in one, but I'm wondering if I just like the idea of it more than the actual experience. You know what I mean?
Sure. I mean, the skinny house is, I guess, kind of ahead of its time in that way. And you know, Ben, that my favorite, you know, if I'm paying for my own hotel when I go to New York, I very much love to stay in the Pod Hotel, which right. is the tiny house of hotels. It's like a ship's cabin, you know, with bunk beds and like the desk built into the wall and stuff. But it's very ergonomic. And I stay there all the time. I couldn't recommend it more. It's a fun experience, but maybe not for like all the time.
Right. Yeah. I mean, one thing that's great about that and this is not a paid ad for pod hotels, is places like that also encourage you to go out and explore the city, which I absolutely love about them. The only place I've spent some time in that was a little too small for me, capsule hotels. I don't have claustrophobia, but that's a tight fit. I don't recommend it.
No. I mean, even after like, you know, 2 or 3 days in the pod hotel, if you're staying with somebody, it's time to go. And
right.
Time to go your separate ways. But it's still fun. I stayed there with my kid recently, actually, and we had a good old time. But yeah, it does. You're right about that. Because at the end of the day, a hotel is just a place to, you know, hang your hat and grab a little shut eye. If you're spending all your time in the hotel room, what are you even doing?
Right. And speaking of time to go, it is time for us to hit the old dusty trail of the internet, folks. We are returning, as my partner in history crime said earlier. We're going to be back on Thursday with part two of Spiteful Architecture, part two. So it's like 2.2. You know what? Don't think about it too much. Just join us in giving a big old thanks to Mr. Max Williams, our super producer, our architect, who has chosen a higher path than spite. Thank you and congratulations, Max.
Yeah, and don't call it a comeback, but do come back for part two of Spite Architecture. Huge thanks to Christopher Asiotis here in spirit, who we mentioned, a tiny house trailblazer in his own right. Jonathan Strickland, who truly is our spite architecture, I think we can all agree. And to you, Ben, that was fun.
Yeah, and also with you.
We'll see you next time, folks.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
I am the ferryman.
In the shadows of the afterlife, the ferryman of souls guides America's most influential spirits to their eternal rest.
Where are you taking me?
Are you death?
This road is not on any map.
How much for a ticket?
All I ask for in payment is a tale.
I don't know who got to Kennedy first.
And the devastation those first bombs caused.
I've never been to hell, but I know intimately the hymns of the damned.
Binge this season of The Passage now. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Ding dong, Las Culturistas calling.
iHeart Podcast Awards 2023 Podcast of the Year, Las Culturistas, with SNL's Bowen Yang and comedian Matt Rogers.
There's stuff happening in 2024 that we really need to address.
Pop culture and huge guests, like the latest episode with
Dua Lipa.
The more I think about it, the more scared and nervous I get.
Listen to the newest episode of Las Culturistas with Dua Lipa and all episodes on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search Las Culturistas to start listening.
Bean Dad, The Dress, 30 to 50 Feral Hogs. If you knew what any of those were, you spend too much time online. And hey, I do too. 16th Minute of Fame is a new weekly podcast hosted by me, Jamie Loftus. And every week, we take a closer look at an internet character of the day. Who are they? What made them so notorious? How did the internet or the algorithm choose them? And what does a person do when they're suddenly confronted with more attention than the human psyche can handle? Listen to 16th Minute of Fame starting May 7th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.